ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नामश्रेष्ठं मनमपि शचीपुत्रमत्रस्वरूपं रूपं तस्यागजमुरुपुरीं माथुरीं गोष्ठवतीं राधाकुण्डं गिरिवरमहो राधिका माधवाशं प्राप्तो यस्य प्रथितः कृपया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयतः परकमलं श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनतन्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। श्री विष्णु सहस्रनाम नेम 640 इज अर्चिता। यू हैव हर्ड द टर्म अर्चना व्हिच मीन्स डीटी वर्शिप। Archa Vigraha, the form who is worshipped. So Archita means he who is worshipped. And like several names in Vishnu Sahasranama, this name can be linked with every other name. Not all name. Well, they can all be linked because they're all names of Vishnu, but why is he worshipable? Then, why is he worshipped? Then we have to look at all the other names, because he is, just like we had Archishman just now, the name before this, he is from whom emanates effulgent spiritual light. Well, that's one reason to worship him. And so many names are there in Vishnu Sahasranam. Well-known names, Mukunda, who gives liberation, Krishna, who is all-attractive, Vishnu, who is all-pervasive, and many lesser-known names also. But for all these, for unlimited reasons, he is worshipable, and he is actually worshipped. Who is he worshipped by? Yang Brahma Varanindra Rudra Maratustan Vanti Divyai Stavai He. All the great demigods worship him. And many other persons also. But the point that demigods are worshipped, Kangshanta Karmanang Siddhim Yajanta Iha Devataha. In this material world, people who desire karma siddhi, perfection of work. Shipram hi manushe loke siddhi bhavati karmaja. They perform work, Vedic authorized work, and worship the demigods and quickly get the result of their actions, which is enjoyment in this material world. So people worship the demigods, but the demigods worship Krishna. Deva deva, Krishna is called Deva Deva, who is the Deva for the Devas, who is worshipable for the worshipped. So he is the most worshipped person. This name can also specifically refer to his form as the deity. He comes in various forms. His original form, Krishna, in the spiritual world, Krishna, Vishnu, so many forms. His avatar forms as Paramatma. And one of his forms is the Archa Vigraha, who comes to this world, who manifests himself in this world specifically for the purpose of being worshipped. Other forms, they do other things also. Krishna, his original form, Krishna, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the spiritual world, he's worshipped, but he does many other things apart from being worshipped. Paramatma within the heart, not so much worshipped in that form. He sees everything, covers everything. Sarvata pani padam tat sarvatokshi shiromukam. Sarvatal shutimal loke. Sarvam avritya tishtati. As the super soul, the oversoul, Paramatma, antaryami, indweller. His eyes are everywhere. Sarvata, his hands, his legs, his eyes, his heads, his mouths, they're everywhere. He covers everything. And he's heard of everywhere. So that he has his specific function. Same person, but different manifestations. So his manifestation as the deity form is specifically for the purpose of being worshipped. He may do other things also, just like the most popular deity in Vrindavan, among all the many, many installed deities there, Bankei Bihari. So he's worshipped, and he also runs off at night to perform Rasa Leela. And just in case he doesn't do it in the daytime, they keep him closed behind a curtain most of the time and just open it quickly. And then close it again to make sure he doesn't run away. So he may do other things also. Part of that worship is he eats. When he says, Patrang pushpang palang toyam yo me bhaktya prayachati tadahang bhakti paharatam ashnami prayatatmana. He says that if one offers me a leaf, a flower, leaf, flower, fruit, or water with bhakti, with love, I will accept it. This specifically refers to his archa form, his worshipable form as the deity. Prayatatmanaha. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains this word to mean properly following all the rules and regulations. He may accept food in other forms also, even without all the proper rules and regulations. The well-known anecdote of the wife of Vidur being so happy that Krishna had come to her home. She only had some bananas to feed him. So in great ecstasy, she was peeling the bananas and giving Krishna the banana skins. Not the bananas. She got a bit mixed up in ecstasy. But Krishna was eating because it was offered with such love that This is worth taking. Can't refuse this. It's offered in such love. So that's unusual. We don't offer the deity banana skins. That wouldn't be accepted. It's not prayatatmanaha, not according to the proper regulations. In deity worship, there are so many rules and regulations. Generally speaking, there are some who worship the deity in pure love, then it becomes not exactly like worship. Worship, the very term worship in English, or puja we have in Sanskrit. Puja is, generally we take that term to mean worship, formal worship. But it also means respect, just like we'll say, refer to a highly venerable person, Parampuja. So So it means most respectable. So in the Archan Marga, in the path of deity worship, it's to be performed with much reverence according to rules and regulations. So Krishna's worship like this. Specifically refers to the formal process of worship. And then there are some devotees who treat the deity just exactly like a person in a very familiar attitude. Bhakshidas Babaji Maharaj, he didn't have any formal deity worship. And there are others in Vrindavan, that Pishima Gosai, she would worship her Gaunitai in a very familiar way, just like her own children. But it's not exactly worship. Just like Pishima, she would, we can say, worship or serve Gaunitai, treating them just like her own sons, and sometimes chastise them. So we don't usually think of a mother worshipping her sons. It's a different mood. It's a mood of great love, but it's not worship. Worship gives the idea of sambrahma sevyama. There's sambrahma vishramba. There's vishramba seva means with great intimacy. Sambrahma vishramba gives the idea of much intimacy. But in the path of deity worship, it is with great respect, and Krishna is worshipped, to be worshipped with great respect. He's the most respectable person, and he manifests in this form. Out of his great mercy upon the conditioned souls, he comes to this world out of his great mercy. Sambhavami Atma Mayaya, he says, I appear in this world Atma Mayaya. Means by his own energy. Maya can mean energy. Generally we understand it to be an illusion. So when he says, Krishna says, I appear by my own Atma Maya, by my own Maya, it means that out of illusion, people do not recognize him. Nato natyadharo dhara, just like an actor on a stage, his original identity is not recognized. Maya can mean mercy, so Krishna appears out of his great mercy by his own energy. Maya can mean energy, shakti. So out of his great mercy, Krishna comes, speaks Bhagavad Gita, performs his pastimes. He comes as Rama. There's so many avatars are there. The Matsya, Kurama, Varaha, Narasimha. There's so many avatars. They are visible in the world as long as they're present in the world. Great devotees can appreciate them. Non-devotees also see them, but they see them through their charma chakshu, through their ordinary eyes, or eyes made of matter. So they don't really see them at all. But in his archa form, he appears in every age for the benefit of his devotees, as his great mercy. There's only one Mother Yashoda who gives birth to Krishna and has him in her home. But Krishna, out of his kindness, accepts if anyone sincerely wants to serve him. He will come in the home or in the temple and agree to be served in this form. So he's available in many holy places and temples, and even in people's homes. He accepts their worship. There are many directions in Shastra, elaborate directions for worship of the deity in the Srimad Bhagavatam. There is a summary of the process of deity worship given by Lord Krishna. He speaks to Uddhava. And there are many elaborate shastras which describe so many rules and regulations. Worship means so many rules and regulations which are followed with the aim of pleasing a person who should be served in the best possible manner without any mistake. So for that purpose, so many rules are given, just so that everyone knows exactly what to do to serve this person who we may not be fit to serve, but out of his mercy, he makes himself available to us. But then we should know what are the rules to follow so that we can properly serve him to the best of our ability. And Krishna very kindly accepts such service to a devotee who, in our present situation, is very difficult. We can't follow all the rules and regulations. We can try, but we're liable to make various mistakes. But Krishna, bhavagrahi, accepts the mood of the devotee, and if the devotee is very sincere to serve him, then Krishna accepts that worship. Practically speaking, by coming as the deity, Krishna, he exposes himself to the inadequacies and the mistakes that the neophyte worshipper will make. So even though he is most worshipable to be served by all, by very highest, topmost devotees, he agrees to be worshipped even by persons who are not very capable to do so. Not very capable means he's the king of all kings, he should be worshipped with great opulence. He doesn't necessarily demand opulence, although the path of deity worship, generally speaking, that should be on a level of some opulence. In our Gaudiya Sampradaya, it's often very simple, but traditionally deity worship means that all valuable items should be offered to him. So we may not have access to those, we may not be wealthy enough for all of that, or we may not be able to worship in the best way. Just like, for instance, deity should be worshipped with completely pure water, but such is not available. In the whole of America, there's no pure water. There's no pure rivers, sacred rivers. And all, even if from the material or the material point, I'm using the word material in a different way. From the, I don't know exactly the word. Okay, material point of view. The water is polluted, contaminated. We can get water from a tap or water from a bottle. It's not fit to serve Krishna. So practically speaking, deity worship shouldn't be conducted in these countries at all. But Krishna, Srila Prabhupada brought him here, so he has to accept the worship on the request of his great pure devotee. And actually, before Srila Prabhupada established temples in the West, people in India, they thought it's not possible to worship deity. First of all, that there could be anything dharmic outside of India, that was considered impossible. And then that deities could be worshipped. First of all, the people are not fit to worship. And second, the whole place is so impure. The whole land is so impure. It's so contaminated with sinful activities. But Krishna agreed on Srila Prabhupada's request to be worshipped. And even we find now all the sampradayas, those whose members previously would have thought it impossible or improper to worship the deities of Vishnu in such a sinful place as America, such an unfit place. There also, they've established temples and deities. So Krishna's his kindness manifests through the personage of his great devotees, Srila Prabhupada, Krishna Kripa Shri Murti, his divine grace, the very form of Krishna's mercy. One of the manifold forms of mercy that Srila Prabhupada manifested in giving us Krishna was giving us Krishna in his deity form to be worshipped, to help to cultivate the dormant love of Krishna and to regulate our lives, center our lives around Krishna as the deity. It's for us, we're a long way, at least generally speaking, here in this material world, everyone is a long way from being qualified to directly go to Krishna in the spiritual world. But he is so kind, he comes to us here in this material world and makes himself available in the form of his holy name, another very important form by which he is worshipped, by offerings of food and bathing, ornaments, clothing, flowers. More than Shastra states that more than gold and jewels, Krishna is pleased by offerings of flowers, fresh, especially fragrant flowers. That's a very important item of deity worship. We're very eager to establish temples, but practically we should have there should be a flower garden with every temple, so we can offer fresh flowers. Otherwise, you see in India, the flowers you get from the flower sellers, they always give the half-rotten flower, not fresh. So that's a very important part of deity worship. And then whoever is cultivating, doing the gardening, they'll be of the Shudra caste, the Mali, flower seller and flower cultivator. That's a Shudra caste, but the Brahmana, by caste, the Brahmanas, they can directly worship and touch and bathe and dress and feed the deity. But by these activities, even the flower, the gardener, the lowly gardener, directly worships Krishna. Swakarmana tamabhya cha siddhin vindati manavaha. Everyone by performance of their work, Krishna says, can worship himself, Krishna. So the gardener is also worshipping Krishna by his work, by very carefully cultivating nice flowers for serving Krishna. And Krishna accepts that service. So what I've said so far about this name follows or is based on or developed from the explanations given by Parashara Bhatta, the original Sri Vaishnav commentator, much of what I said. So he always gives his understanding of these names in Vishnu Sahasranam according to the devotional, very, very devotional spirit, how the Lord is very kind and reveals to himself to the devotees and protects the devotees and nourishes the devotees. And Shankaracharya's commentary, he always gives his understanding in terms of the might and the power and the glory of Vishnu. So yeah, so Shankara's understanding that he gives is that he is worshipped even by great personalities, which I also mentioned. One point that I didn't see any of the commentators who I'm going through have made, but that he was worshipped. Of course, we find throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam, the narration of Krishna's pastimes, that he is worshipped by many different personalities, literally worshipped by Brahma, by Indra and others, but specifically I thought of how at the performance of the Rajasuya sacrifice of Yudhishthira Maharaj, there was a discussion as to who would be worshipped first, who is the most venerable person. And it was Sahadev who established that it should be Krishna. And everyone agreed with that, not quite everyone. Shishupal vehemently disagreed, and as a result, he lost his head. He lost his head to disagree. We say someone's lost their head if they speak or act foolishly. So he lost his head in blaspheming Krishna. Actually, from the very beginning of his life, he was blaspheming Krishna. Little children, what's the first word they're going to say? Mummy. Oh, said mummy. First word. Shishupal, the first thing he said was blaspheming Krishna. He was very intent on that. So anyway, Krishna gave the benediction to his mother that, all right, I won't harm it. I'll just tolerate for some time. But if he blasphemes me 100 times, then I'll retaliate. So Krishna was, every time she, of course he was blaspheming Krishna continually, but when directly to insulting Krishna to his face, Krishna just, he wouldn't say anything. He was just counting. 1, 2, 3, 4. And it came to 100 right at the Rajasuya sacrifice. So he lost his head. Shishupal lost his head. And then Krishna was worshipped. Even though Krishna himself had taken the role, because he was an intimate friend of Yudhishthira Maharaj and just like a younger brother. So Krishna took the role of washing the feet of the incoming guests. But when it came to who should be worshipped first, that means who's the most venerable person and in this assembly. And in this assembly, so many great personalities from all over the universe was present. So Sahadev rightly established that Krishna should be worshipped first. And he was. Now, Baladev Vidyabhushan, the Gauriya commentator on Vishnu Sahasranam, this series of names, he gives a completely different perspective on. This series of names means this name, few names before, few names afterwards. The commentators, they see patterns in the names. The names come in different groups. They all have a similar theme. So often Baladev Vidyabhushan's explanations of these names, they are the same as or very similar to other commentators. But in this series of names, he has given a unique perspective. And to this name, Archita, who has been worshipped, who is worshipped, he, Baladev, gives the meaning that when Krishna entered Mathura, then the florists, the flower seller, Sudama, not to be confused with the cowherd boy Sudama. He worshipped Krishna, and Kubja worshipped Krishna. So Krishna is worshipped, and this name, it is a dynamic name, in as much as its meaning is being expanded more and more. We worship Krishna, and then he's more worshipped. He's already worshipped all over the universe, beyond the universe, everywhere, by all saintly persons. But then, if again we offer arati, we worship him, then again the meaning of the name, archa, it becomes expanded. He's worshipped more. It's always increasing, the worship of Krishna. So the next name, 641, the name is Kumbha. Kumbha. Does anyone know what Kumbha means? Kumbha Mela? Why Kumbha? Why is it called Kumbha Mela? Is it big? Pot. The meaning is a pot. Why is it Kumbha Mela? What's it got to do with a pot? Pot of nectar? The nectar comes down? Drops come down. The drops of amrita from the pot. So Krishna means a pot. Strange name, huh? Pot. If you give someone a name, you call them pot. Seems like it. But everything is Krishna, so it can be called a pot also. There are other meanings also, and the acharyas have explained that Parasha Bhatta by how do they explain it in various ways? The names may have various meanings. It's not just by some speculation, but by an analysis of the words. Every word in Sanskrit, every syllable has a specific meaning, which are derived from linguistic roots. So that's why we'll find some words that we say in English, they have many equivalents in Sanskrit. For instance, tree. What's the name for tree in Sanskrit? Common name? Vriksha in Bengal. That means that which is cuttable, that which is to be cut. Then another, padapa, drinks through his feet. How many words are there for lotus? Many, yeah? Many, many words for lotus. They all have a meaning, just like pankaja, born from mud. That doesn't sound like a very nice name, but born from mud, what a beautiful flower is born from the mud. So they all have meanings. Every word has a meaning. And the first meaning that Parasha Bhatta, the original Sri Vaishnava commentator, gives is breaking it up, that the root kamu gives the meaning from kamu, and then he cites sutra from the Siddhanta Kaumudi to say how this kum, the first part of this name, how it is understood as karma. It's not just his making it up or speculating, but he refers to ancient Shastra. He who is desired, and then bha gives the idea of light or beauty. So he who is desired because of his beauty. That sounds a lot more godlike than pot. He who is desired because of his beauty. Although the name pot, that will come, the explanation of that will come also. But the first meaning that Parashara Bhatta gives is that he is desired for his beauty. And devotees, they love Krishna. Why do they love Krishna? Well, Krishna is lovable in all respects. He's beautiful, he's funny, he's kind, he's unkind sometimes, but in a very kind way. He's seemingly unkind. His flute attracts. Those who love Krishna, they may not even think why they love Krishna, but his qualities, he has all the qualities which qualify him, or by which we can understand that there's no person like him. So these qualities, they excite in the devotees desire to serve him, to love him, to see him. So he's desired, he's an object of desire. The objects of desire are very dangerous. They bind us in this material world. Vishayendriya samyogam, by the combination, the coming together of the senses and the sense objects, yata de agre mritopamam, it seems like nectar. But the end result is simply poisonous. So the combination of the senses and the sense objects is very dangerous. And non-devotee spiritualists, the impersonalists, they try to stop the activities of the senses, knowing they're very dangerous. But it's not possible to stop the activities of the senses. It's not possible to close down the mind, because thought is, and desire is intrinsic to the living being. So the same tendency to desire, which binds us in this material world, this is Buddhadev's analysis, that the root cause of all suffering is desire. So that's true. Therefore, he says, stop all desire. But what he doesn't teach is that the root cause of all bliss is also desire. The root cause of all bliss is Krishna. He is the one who is desirable. So by desiring Krishna instead of desiring Maya, then we're purified. Then that desire, instead of binding us in this material world, it binds us to Krishna. This whole idea will become free. We'll get mukti. We're never free in the full sense of the term. The only one who is fully free is Krishna. He is Swatantra, Swarat. He's the only one who's free. But then he's also bound by desire. That's the amazing aspect of the Supreme Lord, that he who is totally independent, he's also become subordinate to his devotees because of his desire. Therefore, highest of all, or most powerful of all, is desire. Even more powerful than Krishna. Is that possible? More powerful than God. Is that possible? More powerful than God? I remember reading many years ago that for the first time, the Nectar of Devotion. And in In the beginning of the Nectar of Devotion, Srila Prabhupada writes that devotional service is even more powerful than God because it controls God. And I thought this was very strange. How can something be more powerful than God? That comes in the very beginning of the Sri Krishna Karshani Chasa. Pure devotional service attracts even Krishna. So Krishna, he is the object of desire for the devotees, and actually for everyone, as George Harrison wrote in his introductory words to the Krishna book, that everyone is looking for Krishna. Some people realize it and some people don't. The happiness that we look for in material sense objects, ultimately we're looking for Krishna. When the fly or the living being who's meant to be a servant of Krishna but is now trapped in the body of a fly and trapped in the mindset of a fly sees some stool and is attracted, oh, I must go there to the stool. I don't think you see in this country, and maybe in India won't be seen if the Prime Minister's desire to have toilets in every house becomes fulfilled, then we won't be able to use this kind of analogy much more. But it hasn't fully happened yet. There's still plenty of passing stool in the fields and hogs coming along to get their breakfast. It's still going on. So the fly, he has a very strong desire. He doesn't analyze. As far as I know, there are no psychoanalysts in the fly community. And he doesn't think about why am I doing. He's not a philosopher. But he's attracted to the stool. Why should the jiva, who's supposed to be Satchidananda, eternal, full of bliss and knowledge, who's supposed to be dancing with Krishna, why should he be attracted to the stool? It's the same propensity, desire. But it's become misplaced, misdirected. The desire is very powerful. This one verse from Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Indriyani Purani Ahur Indriyebhya Parang Manaha Manasastu Parabuddhe Yo Buddhe Paratastu Saha. Lord Krishna says that they say, referring to the Indriya, the senses, beyond the senses is the mind, beyond the senses is the intelligence, and beyond the intelligence is Saha, he or it. So Srila Prabhupada, following Baladeva Vidyabhushan's commentary, says that beyond that is the soul, the Atma. Ramanuja Acharya, in his commentary, says that even higher or more powerful than the mind, the senses and the intelligence is desire, karma. That's being referred to. It overcomes the mind, the senses and the intelligence, desire, very, very powerful. So there's a great secret to simply make Krishna the object of our desire. So much difficulty the impersonalists go through to try to stop desire. It's very, very difficult because they're caught in a paradox. They want to stop desire, but wanting to stop means it's also a desire. So how do you get out of that? It's an impossible paradox. If you stop trying to get free from desire, then you don't get free from desire. If you try to get free from desire, you're also desiring. So you're caught. So they go through much difficulty, and they may attain to some state which might seem to be a state of desirelessness. But because they didn't purify their desire, because anadrita, yushmadangraya, they did not cultivate the desire, they ignored to worship Krishna. So for all their efforts to become liberated, they simply have to fall down again into material desire. So that Krishna is the central point of love, is the meaning of Krishna consciousness. Krishna is the actual object of desire. In technical language, the vishaya of prem, the object of love, is Krishna, and ashraya is Radha and all the devotees. Love resides in the devotees, and the object of love is Krishna. So this vishaya, that's generally, it's a common term, it means subject. It means a subject, and it means, it's generally used to mean objects of sense gratification. There's the word vishayi, which means a sense enjoyer, and he enjoys vishaya, which means sense enjoyment. The objects of sense gratification. But the pure vishaya, the pure, the central or original object of desire is Krishna. So a very, very important point to understand. We simply love Krishna, and that's our whole spiritual life is complete. And it's easy because it's natural. But we don't find it easy because we're attracted to material sense objects due to bad inclination. Since time immemorial, we're attracted to that which is simply causes distress, but it seems in the beginning, yat tadagre mritopamam pariname vishamiva yat sukam rajasam smita. Happiness, what's called happiness in the mode of passion, is that of the happiness that arises from interaction of the senses with the sense objects. And it seems so, immediately it seems so relishable, but very quickly, we experience poisonous effects. And Srila Prabhupada, in his purport on this Bhagavad Gita verse, gives the example that a young man and a young woman meet, they exchange words, they touch each other, and it all seems so wonderful. Love, 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 how wonderful. It's the object of the central theme of how much poetry and songs, cinema, films. I just a few days ago, I was on a 10-hour flight, and I looked through, they have a whole big catalog of so many films they have available, and it must have been several hundred. I looked through them to see if there's anything that might be of any interest to me, and no, there wasn't. But so many, the theme is love, love, love. It's a very powerful attraction. Maitunagara. We're chained up in this material world, that the sexual attraction. Yan maitunadi griha medhi sukham hitucham. The happiness in material life, which seems very great. And originally it seems very, 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 very overwhelming desire, sexual attraction. But very quickly, as Srila Prabhupada says, in the beginning they come together, and it seems so wonderful. I love forever. I love you forever. Which is in itself a very foolish idea to think like that. But that's Maya. That's how it works. But you see at the wedding, the shubh, they call shubh, auspicious wedding. But the actual fact is that they have to work very hard to live in some, mostly, people live in very inadequate dwellings. Even just like in a big city in India, you can pay huge amount of money just to live in something which is almost literally like a pigeon home, as Srila Prabhupada would call it, some high building with, even if you go in someone's apartment, it's very cramped, and they make the toilet in such a way that the toilet is there and the door opens and there's just 1 millimeter between the door and the toilet. The space is so cramped. So if you get inside, you can hardly turn around. Literally, it's like that. And that's considered a prestigious dwelling compared to the literally millions of people who live in the slums in that same city. But for the people who live in the slums, it's home sweet home. It's all centered around sexual desire, poison. It's poison because we forget Krishna, and poison because where's the happiness? We take it as happiness. But for all their, again, another example Srila Prabhupada gives, that people, they work so hard from early in the morning. Again, if we take Bombay as an example, from early in the morning, people here also, early in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, the traffic starts, people are going to work, and then on the local trains, completely packed in Bombay, so packed that an average of about 12 people a day die on the trains in Bombay. They don't even report it in the newspapers. It's just that people fall off, a few commit suicide, like this. At risk of life, one goes to it. Then if you go 11 o'clock at night to catch an overnight train, you'll see coming out of the city, the trains are completely packed. So completely packed. And why are they doing that? Yan maitunadi, grihamedi, sukham, hitucham. Yes, they work hard all day, they come home, they have a little sex and go to sleep. And then again next day to work. So that Krishna should be the object of love is the central point of Krishna consciousness. Such an important point. So Kumbha, from this name, and such an important point that Krishna is the actual object of desire. Instead of trying to stop our desire, or instead of indulging in desire, that's what actually happens. I remember the first time I read, that's in Adi Leela, chapter 7. Of Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada writes that ultimately both the Mayavadis of Varanasi and their another branch of spiritual non-devotees, the Buddhists of Sarnath, ultimately they're all gross materialists. So I was surprised to read that. In the teachings of Lord Chaitanya and Chaitanya Charitamrita, that Sri Shankaracharya came to give impetus to material desire. Well, how is that? He's preaching against it. But what actually happens? I had some realization of this when I was for some time based in Thailand, which is a staunchly Buddhist country. And in Thailand, it's a place of great material enjoyment. People go from all over the world to enjoy the placing their sexual organ in a Thai sexual organ. That's the great pleasure of Thailand. The land of great material enjoyment. How is that with Buddhism? How is it that the central object of Thai culture, sunuk, material enjoyment, how is that if it's a Buddhist country? So I thought about that. Also, one time when I was there, I asked one typical Thai woman, nothing, not a great philosopher. I don't think there are any. There are no great philosophers anywhere in the world outside of the Vaishnavas. So I said because they're very fond of eating pork in Thailand, among other things which we won't mention. So I said, that don't you know that by eating pigs you'll become a pig in your next life? She said, yeah. Then why are you doing that? Well, that will also be sanuk, that will also be fun. So I thought about that why the Buddhists and the teaching of the Buddha is this world is full of suffering, desire is the cause of suffering, therefore we have to get free from desire. But especially in Thailand, the people are actively cultivating desire and see no dichotomy between that and being a Buddhist. So what's going on here? So what I thought about is that to actually achieve that state of nirvana or snuffing out, to actually achieve that state, one has to go through many lifetimes of difficult practices. And what do you get out of the end of it? Nothing, literally. So what do you want to do that for? You might as well enjoy. Even if the suffering's there, you get some enjoyment by eating pigs. None of us here would like to eat pigs, but many people do. The goal is so unrelishable, and the means to attain it is so unrelishable that, well, you might as well eat pigs and insert your genital into here, there, and everywhere. Why not? You get it's enjoyable. So because they have that background of that philosophy, then they really make a big thing out of enjoyment. They don't philosophize it at all. They just get right into it. So this denying the spiritual bliss that comes from surrender to Krishna, submitting ourselves to Krishna, by denying that, then, and at the same time saying that this world is suffering, and denying service to Krishna, therefore they invent this ghostly philosophy, this impersonalism. In Mayavad is based on worship of Lord Shiva, which is also ghostly. The Lord Shiva is the head of the ghosts. So people, they want to become like ghosts, become impersonalists and give impetus indirectly to material enjoyment. So it's a disaster. This impersonal philosophy is a complete disaster to the actual progressive spiritual life. Why? Why should they do that? Why deny Krishna? Envy of Krishna? Mayavadi, Krishna, Aparadi. We're all envious of Krishna. Krishna is the object of desire. That's something for our enjoyment. No, not exactly. That's the whole mistake. In this world, we want to enjoy taking ourselves to be independent enjoyers, but Krishna is the only independent enjoyer. We desire Him means we desire to serve Him. That is the point. Always serve, always accept our position as being subordinate to Krishna. This point has to be made again and again and again and again and again. Those who talk of love of Krishna, without stressing service to Krishna, surrender to Krishna, they're simply cheating. Mm. There's no love without service. Even in the perverted reflection of love in this material world, people in the modern age, they can't live together peacefully in married life without any big philosophy about it. There's so many people, the whole world practically, the people would get married and they'd stay married. They weren't great transcendentalists, and meat eaters, and so not highly moral. But in this sense, they were moral. Why? Because they had some understanding that man has a responsibility, wife has a responsibility, they're serving each other, there's duty. But in the modern age, the so-called marriage is all just for sense gratification. And therefore they say, oh, why not man marry man, woman marry woman? Why not? It's just for, if that's what you want, why not? It's all based on the individual desire. But then because everyone puts their own desire first, instead of serving the other, being responsible to the other. And what are you going to serve? One man to another man. Well, why should you serve? In marriage, actual marriage, man combines with woman, putrarte kriyate bharya, for the purpose of having children. So they combine together for children, and together they serve the children. It's not in and of itself a very high aspiration, or the sparrows, somehow or other, they don't have marriage bureaus or arrange marriages or any such thing, but the sparrows and the starlings, the swans, somehow or other, they all find a mate and they live together. And they go on with their life. They don't divorce. Because that element, because that idea of service and responsibility is not there in marriage, so-called marriage, then after some time they quarrel and fight and divorce, because they take it for sense enjoyment, which in the beginning seems like nectar, but very quickly turns to poison, and therefore they cannot live happily. So, service to Krishna, love of Krishna, desire for Krishna, service, surrender, understand our position. Just like in family life, people don't understand their position. The man is supposed to be responsible and take charge, and the wife is supposed to serve the husband. But this idea that the wife should serve the husband has become very unpalatable in the modern age, because they've just promoted that we are all meant for enjoyment. So similarly, why people, we don't get love of Krishna as long as we are not fixed in the understanding that that is what we are meant to do. Why should we serve Krishna? That's what we're meant to do. That is the ultimate meaning of dharma. Dharma means what is our intrinsic position. Our intrinsic position is to serve Krishna. And if we do that, then things work out very well. So similarly, the conditioning, the particular situation we've got, in the body of a woman, stri dharma, her particular position that goes with that body, is to serve the husband. And then she's content in that role. So people don't understand all big psychology and different ideas, completely bogus, all of them. They don't understand these very basic points, neither materially nor spiritually. They have no idea. We're meant for service. That is the dharma of every living being. And the ultimate object of service is Krishna. So we have desire, but we should know how to desire, who to desire, what are the limits of our desire, what is the proper expression of our desire. So that Krishna is the object of desire. This is the central point of understanding. So many books Srila Prabhupada has given us. He spoke literally day and night, Just to establish this point, that we're all eternal servants of Krishna. Life's desires should not be aimed at satisfying the senses. Kamasya nindriya priti. One should desire to live simply for the sake of tattva jignyasa, understanding all these points. So, Krishna is the proper object of desire. Then Parashara Bhatta himself gives another meaning to this name, another understanding of this name, Kumbha. Another meaning is that he shines in this world. And looking back to the previous name, Archita, who is worshipped as the deity, Parashara Bhatta gives the understanding that he shines in this world as the deity, or he shines and he sanctifies that whole area around where he is present. So there are many statements in Shastra, which Parashara Bhatta gives, that wherever the deity is worshipped, that whole area becomes sanctified. And specifically, Parashara Bhatta refers to the Divya Deshams, of the which are recognized in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, the sacred places. Were you in Tamil Nadu on the Padayatra? You went to all the Divya Deshams there. So many, here and there. Mostly in Tamil Nadu, what's nowadays called Tamil Nadu. Holy places. Why are they holy? Because the Supreme Lord, Krishna, in his deity form, has kindly manifested there. So he shines in this world. And then here there's a recommendation for living and dying in a Divya Desham. We also say, go to Vrindavan to die. If death is near, go to Vrindavan or Mayapur. Another commentator gives the idea, a similar idea, that he fills this world with his fame and thus makes it a fit place to live in. So that, now we're coming closer to the idea of Kumbha as a pot. So, he in whom everything is contained. What is a pot? What is the purpose of a pot? To keep things in, right? So, within whom everything exists. Now, if we say a pot, it doesn't sound like a name of God. But in the understanding, he in whom everything exists, within whom everything is contained, who maintains everything exists in him. Mayatatam idam sarvam jagadavyakta murtina matsthani sarvabhutani nachaham teshvavastita. Krishna says, everything in this world, everything here in this world, that is expanded from my impersonal existence. I'm present, not present, in everything. So Krishna, everything exists in Krishna. Everything can happen. It's all directed by Krishna. So everything, he's a pot in which everything exists. And of course, he directs everything that exists also. Maya dhakshena prakriti. Everything exists within him, because of him, under his control. Another thing, although it's not mentioned here, this is not a very good pot to live in. He takes us out of this pot and transplants us to where we can fully and luxuriantly grow in the spiritual world. Then Baladev Vidyabhushan again gives another understanding, again based on Krishna's pastimes in Mathura. Krishna is an object of desire. Well, who desires Krishna? All living beings desire Krishna, but particularly in Mathura, Kubja, she very openly desired Krishna. And Baladev Vidyabhushan says that this name Kumbha refers to Krishna by his great beauty. Kubja was charmed and attracted. She desired him. She wanted to enjoy him. And she snatched the edge of his garments. She wanted to catch him. And Krishna allowed that, even though she had her desire for Krishna was not fully on the spiritual platform. But Krishna, anyway, accepted that. Hare Krishna. It's now 5:45, and that's the time given for us to depart from here. So I'll finish here. You like to talk about my books. Okay. Oh, wait a minute. There's another. I just missed. Just like a pot protects everything within it. So he protects. It keeps everything in shape, just like water within a pot, or a plant within a pot. So he protects everything within the universe also. So there's another meaning. He supports us. No one else can support us. No one else can protect us as he can. What is that verse? Prahlad Maharaj says, only Krishna can protect. Balasya neha sharanam pitarau nrsimha. The parents can't protect the children, medicine, a boat can't protect people who are destined to drown. So the only protection is Krishna. Okay, you can speak for 2 minutes on my books, if you like.